हरिः
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावरीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 86. Not on 86?
Yes, I am. I was just unaware that I was on 86.
You weren't here this morning?
No.
I see.
I was here for Vinaka Sutra.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
The Prajapatis continued. O Lord, you are self-effulgent and supreme. You create this mature world by your personal energy, and you assume the names Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara when you act in creation, maintenance, and annihilation. What's that mean, 33?
Footnote.
Very big footnote.
Big footnote.
Okay.
Oh, you want it big.
Writing boot note. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in verse 23, this prayer is actually offered to Lord Vishnu, the Purusha, who in his incarnation as the Guna avatars assumes the names Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. Right? So this is like what Vedanta Sutra was talking about, is that you have the qualities that are attributed to Vishnu. Even though if you're talking to seemingly talking to someone else, it still doesn't mean that it's not about Vishnu. Right? Since all the Vedic literature is actually about Vishnu anyway, there isn't someone else that is being discussed. But therefore, it's just a matter, are we dealing with him as Bhagavan, as Paramatma, as Brahman, you know, which particular Swamsa or expansion or like that, you know, so that's the various aspects that are there. Okay.
Self-realized cat.
Yes. Does that make sense? So even though it's being presented to Lord Shiva, but it's actually the potency within him. Just like Indra was saying, worship me. But he was meaning the aspect of Indra that is coming from the Lord. It means the potency of Indra, what makes him Indra, is coming from the Lord. That's who you should worship. So you have to see the context. Yeah? You are the cause of all causes, the self-effulgent, inconceivable, impersonal Brahman, who is originally Parabrahman. You manifest various potencies in this cosmic manifestation. 34. I guess you want to make sure you don't miss the footnote. Srila Prabhupada writes in verse 24, this prayer is offered to the impersonal Brahman, which consists of the effulgent rays of Parabrahman. Parabrahman is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. Bhagavad Gita 10:12. When Lord Shiva is worshipped as Parabrahman, the worship is meant for Lord Vishnu. O Lord, you are the original source of Vedic literature. You are the original cause of material creation. The life force, the senses, the five elements, the three modes, the Mahat Tattva. You are eternal time, determination, and the two religious systems called truth, Satya, and truthfulness, Rita. You are the shelter of the syllable Om, which consists of three letters, A, U, and M, 23-25. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in the following five verses, 26-30, the demigods praise the Lord as the total of everything in the universe. O Father of all planets, learned scholars know that fire is your mouth, right? Because remember, it was pointed out, this is to Sadashiva that they're talking. So Sadashiva is actually Mahavishnu. Right? It's just that mood of where he's going to be interactive, where he's going to create, maintain, and destroy. Because Karana Dakshai Vishnu on one side, as Vishnu, then he's just the Supreme Lord. But at the same time, is because he's a Purusha avatar, there's the aspect of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Right? So in that mood, specifically the one of destruction, because here by time everything is destroyed, then he takes on that mood of Sadashiva. So that's when he glances, he actually starts creation, does the creation with Sadashiva, as Sadashiva. Right? Then when it comes through into this side, then you get Rudra as just that specific demigod, the guna avatar mode of ignorance. But actually, he is the expansion of Sadashiva, who's actually a mood of Mahavishnu. Right? Like a Dvaitacharya, he's Vishnu Tattva, but he's also known as Sadashiva. Yes?
So Sadashiva is before transformation.
It's a transformation, you could say, in the mood, so there is transformation, just like Balaram is a different mood.
But still Vishnu Tattva.
Yes, I would say at the same time as the Shiva Tattva, but at the same time you're not really making any distinction there. But when you come through into Rudra, then you can say that's the transformation, now milk has become yogurt.
Right.
But before that, it's not really that they... At that point, it's kind of like it's just a matter of which mood you see him, because Brahma Samhita is talking about that Mahavishnu, when he's there, when he's sleeping, and this whole process of creation is going on, then his right side is Sadashiva, his left side is Hiranyagarbha. Like that. And so then, you know, so you have all these aspects there. So it seems to be when he's in the mood of creation, that's Hiranyagarbha. In the mood of destruction, that'll be Sadashiva. And maintenance, that's as Vishnu. So that's before when you come through. Because when you come through, then Vishnu is the guna avatar of goodness. But at the same time, it's Vishnu who is in pure goodness who's maintaining it. Because no one else can actually take care of it. Right, because maintenance actually means you have to be providing what's required. Right, so the universe is maintained through the various energies. Where do those come from? So he's not managing those energies like Brahma and Shiva. They're actually, he's the source of them. So actually only Vishnu can be the maintainer of the universe. Right? It's just like to say, the man is maintaining the family. Where's the house from? Where's the money from? Where's the energy and effort from? And the plans? They're from him. Right? Then you can say, then he puts in that, you know, whatever specific effort. But it's, so the whole point is it's coming from. It means it's Mahavishnu. Right? Does that make sense? He's the one maintaining everything. So he just expands and does that within the universe. As Garbhadaksha and Kiradaksha Vishnu.
Do I remember incorrectly that sometimes there's a jiva involved in Hiranyagarbha?
A jiva involved in Hiranyagarbha.
It's a post for jiva?
That post that you're thinking of, that Hiranyagarbha, that's Lord Brahma. He's
okay.
Also known as Hiranyagarbha.
Yeah. Okay.
See, is
okay.
That mood of the Lord as the creator is Hiranyagarbha, the universes themselves, you know, as the golden spheres, the golden eggs, that's Hiranyagarbha. Then when he comes into the world as, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, because he's the one that's going to be the basis of the whole thing, then he's also known as Hiranyagarbha. Like that. And then you have, then from his navel comes the lotus, which is then has all the potency of creation within it, all the jivas, the whole primary creation, everything's there. Brahma's born from that. Then from there comes, Brahma does the secondary creation. Mm-hmm. So he's known as Hiranyagarbha. So all these different aspects are Hiranyagarbha.
But there's not like the primary demigods that are just existing in an element? That's not...
Means here, if you want to get into the elementals and all that kind of stuff, then you have to... They have these big, you know, the higher big... like halls or, you know, places like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so all the New Ages go there. And so you just have to find some corner where there's some guy wearing cargo shorts, sandals, probably a Hawaiian shirt,
yes,
and a grizzly beard and stuff like that. And he'll be talking about the elementals.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, so we're not talking about that guy. Yeah. So what we're talking about here is that they're primary there. They're the ones that will be the ones that do, you know, control all the different things. They're the prototypes of the demigods inside.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes. So they're just expanded from there. So they're expansions of the Lord, and then what's in the universe is their expansions of them. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And it seems that it's just the main ones, not the 33 million. Because in the prayers of the personified Vedas, that's too, I can see there's when the Lord's sleeping. So then he has his associates, but it doesn't specifically mention there's 33 million. I think that's just for here, but there, they're the personified Vedas. So they're jivas, but because they know they're so absorbed in the scriptural understanding that they're considered personified Vedas. You know, like you say, let's say, you now and again, you know, there's been a few in history where somebody is such a scholar that they'll call them a walking encyclopedia. Right? So that's the personified Vedas. Right? You know, but they know the Veda, you know, how many hairs on the left foot of a tsetse fly. They're not that stuff. Right? Yeah. There is a demigod who knows that. But,
you know, but, you never know when you might meet them.
Yes.
I'm just trying to clarify. There's Sheshanaga, and then Karandakashai Vishnu's name on him.
Yes.
And then there is a Garbhadakshai Vishnu and Kshirdakshai Vishnu.
Yes, and all of them are laying on Sheshanaga.
All of them in their own places.
Yes, in their own places.
So in terms of Vasudeva Sankarshan Pratyamna and Yoga, who is who?
Karanodakshai Vishnu is Shankarshan, Garbhodakshai Vishnu is Prajumna, and Kiradakshai Vishnu is Aniruddha.
No, who's the Naga? Who's the
Shesha? It'd be expansion of Balaram. Balaram as Sesha. Because it said Sesha is the last of the expansions. So those are all Vishnu Tattva.
Right.
Then there's the one who holds up all the planets and everything like that. That one can be a jiva.
That's Ananta. It's not Shesha.
Same. Sesha and Ananta, they're the same. But here is an expansion of him. Just like within the universe, the Rudra here, then he can be affected by the modes, but Sadashiva outside is not. So it's just that you have one that he does that, a jiva is allowed, like Brahma. He does creation, but actually creation is done by Krishna. He's just the person who gets empowered to do those things. So there's someone who somehow or another has the particular inclination to have a lot of heads and hold up a lot of planets. You know, but at the same time, it appears that all these universes, they're held up on the head of Ananta Sesh, who's with Karanodakshai Vishnu. You know, there it says it's just like a mustard seed sitting on his head. Like that. But the same principle would be here is that they're holding up a planet. If you could hold up the whole universe, which is way, way bigger than the planets, like what we're saying, is if you take if you take the inside of the universe to be 2.5 centimeters, right, then one side of the universe, meaning from the outside all the way out, you know, just the thickness, would be from here to Krishna Nagar. So the universe is.
So we're not getting out that way.
That, yeah, it's when you call, when you, it means, as far as high security,
yes,
you know, how you say, institutions go.
Penitentiary.
This is, you don't get better than this. So that's held up by Ananta. And then within the universe, then to hold up a whole planet, that's nothing for that potency of Ananta. So you can see as the jiva who's there, even though it seems very big to us, it's actually very small compared to the potency of what Balaram does. So it's just you have all these levels, they're all him. And then Vasudeva will be, generally we would say, the Leela avatars.
So he's none of them.
They're not in the mood of Vasudeva because they're actually expanding from, yeah, the Leela avatars to be Vasudeva. Yes.
So then previously we saw that Brahma came with the demigods and they offered praise to Kshiradakshaya.
Yes, Kshiradakshaya.
Is he the same as the guna avatar representing the mode of goodness?
Yes, yes. So the guna avatar representing goodness is on the island Swetadweep in the Milk Ocean, laying on Ananta and all that, and then Brahma and that, they can't see him. They have to go to the shore, meditate. If he reveals himself as he did there, Zajita, he came and then he revealed himself and then he went and, you know, picked up the mountain, picked up the demigods, placed the mountain, helped with the churning. You know, as we see that they were churning so much and agitating so much, but they couldn't even get anything. So then he had to, you know, take part. You know, seriously. I mean, it must have been there before, but they were doing all the work, you know. And then he's getting into it, and then it's... Right? They're doing, they get tired. He empowers them with the particular modes that inspire them, and they do very good again, and then they get tired. And then he starts to do, and then the Kalakuta comes. Because poison comes out first. That's why it said that mode of goodness means it's bitter in the beginning and sweet at the end. So here we can see is that it's the Lord's pastime. So the poisons in that come out first, then you're going to get the nectar after. So everything always works on these principles, but depending upon how it's applied, then you get different flavors. That way you get unlimited. You know, sambandhabhidaya and prayojana, but depending where you're applying it, then it seems to be something totally different.
Yeah.
But it's still the same, you know, because the principle is that in the created there is the flavor of the creator. Does that make sense? So you're going to get that aspect of the Lord being, how you say, being able to perceive the Lord in everything. It's just that when he takes on a particular form by a particular energy, then. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it says as long as there's no mosquitoes, then you'd be fine over there. But if the mosquitoes get you, then this is for mosquitoes.
In Finland, the air is fresh. This is different.
Yeah. True. Yeah, they always call it fresh. You come outside, and if you breathe too deeply, your lungs freeze, and then they go, fresh. Everybody else is going, freezing, and they're going, fresh. In other words, if you can't breathe, it's so cold, then they'll say it's cold, like that, you know. It's all perception, yeah. So up where Santa lives, it's always fresh. Yeah, I wonder what everybody, if everybody's caught on yet that Santa's actually Finnish.
You're talking to someone from Denmark here. I mean, this is a sensitive topic, that's all I'm saying. We'll say he's from Greenland.
Greenland?
Yes.
So, you made all the propaganda to get all the people to not go to Iceland, but to go to Greenland because Santa was there? So that means you don't really care, so you can't be such a sensitive person.
Not saying it makes sense.
Now, if you had said that it was on Svalbard, then that I would understand.
That would be Norway. We lost Norway 100 years ago. That's no good.
So you don't talk about
no,
it?
No, we don't. Okay. We do very much not talk about it. So now you know.
Very much not.
If you don't know, now you know.
Okay. So maybe it's that in Finland is where he takes care of the European, you know, yeah, sector, and then Greenland takes care of the new world.
The new world.
Yeah, okay.
Could be.
Okay. Now we've worked that out. We can move on now. Okay.
Serious topic.
Yes, that delicate topic.
We're all still here.
Back to the topic, possible.
Okay.
No, I have a question.
Oh, you have a question?
Back to the topic.
Oh, okay.
Before the Lord empowered the demons and Vasuki with the modes, they were churning. On
yes.
What power?
Their own, but you saw they didn't get very far. They got fatigued very quickly.
With the modes, they also didn't get very far.
No, they got farther. No, it means they're in those modes, but then Krishna just increased that. So then they felt inspired. So is that if you're empowered with your own mode, then you feel inspired. Right, those in the mode of ignorance, when that's there, you'll feel inspired. Those in passion, those in goodness. Because if you use the wrong mode, you won't feel inspired. Right. Does that make sense?
For devotees, then, usually we purify the modes.
Yes, you want to be empowered with pure goodness.
Yeah. So we change the modes that are inherent within us.
Means the consciousness goes above the mode. The body still works by the modes. The modes don't change. But there's pure goodness. So, in other words, if there was, in the particular form that we're in, if we are, consciousness is lower than the standard, then there may be lower modes involved there. But once we purify, then it'll come back to its natural state. But otherwise, the body is going to function on whatever modes it works on. Just like the car, whether you're driving it, it says, how you say, one of the Hatfields or McCoys is driving their pickup truck like that, delivering some particular beverages for a particular, party, then it runs on petrol. Now, if somehow or another that Hatfield becomes a devotee and now he drives his car and goes out on Sankirtan, it still runs on petrol. He just may take a few of the decals and other things off the back bumper and weird stuff like that. So. Does that make sense? So that will remain, but what happens is we're not affected by those modes. We just use those modes. Does that make sense? That's the difference. So it's sometimes thought, because we're transcendental, we're above the modes. But yes, the soul may be, but the body still works by those particular modes. It's not that now we're a devotee, now we can fly or something. As we mentioned, our preacher in Assisi, he tried that. It didn't work out so good.
Good old Francis.
Yeah, he even took off, all the extra weight, and because birds are light, and it still it didn't work. Yeah.
So Sadashiva is as good as Nulakhandam said, because Mahavishnu just glances the creation, and then the Prajapatis are praying to Sadashiva.
Yes.
And Shivji, he is the one who drinks the poison.
Yes.
So he is basically the deity of ignorance,
yes,
destruction, but then he is maintaining, he's functioning contrary to his function.
Yes, but he's destroying the bad effect of the Kalakuta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah?
So then that's what he does. But ultimately, whose arrangement is that?
Krishna.
Yeah, so then. Hmm. Yeah. Okay. O Father of all planets, learned scholars know that fire is your mouth. Right? Because then for the yogis, that's how he eats. Right? The surface of the globe is your lotus feet. Eternal time is your movement. All the directions are your ears. And Varuna, master of the waters, is your tongue. Right? Because taste comes by water. Your tongue's dry, you can't taste anything. Or if something that you're eating is dry, there's no taste. Right? O Lord, the sky is your navel. The air is your breathing. The sun is your eyes, and the water is your semen. You are the shelter of all kinds of living entities, high and low. The god of the moon is your mind, and the upper planetary system is your head. O Lord, you are the three Vedas personified. The seven seas are your abdomen, and the mountains are your bones. So that means all those, how you say? The guys with the beards, one leg on the clippers, then they were always floating around in Krishna's abdomen. Right? What? That one went over your head. Wow.
I didn't. Yes?
No? They got a parrot on their shoulder?
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's why they're so attached, because it's Krishna's abdomen, right? Because they always talk about the seven seas, not six seas or five or four and a half. And the mountains are your bones. All drugs, creepers, and vegetables are the hairs on your body. The Vedic mantras, like Gayatri, are the seven layers of your body. And the Vedic religious system is the core of your heart. O Lord, the five important Vedic mantras are represented by your five faces, from which the 38 most celebrated Vedic mantras have been generated.
Five more most important ones,
no? I'm not sure. Do we have any? It's coming up. Okay, Vedic mantra. Your lordship being celebrated as Lord Shiva is self-illuminated. You are directly, he says here, your lordship being celebrated as Lord Shiva means that, so that aspect, so all that potency he's going to do, but it's him. And so, but it's going to be this aspect of it's going to drink it. Like Vishnu is not going to drink it like that. It's, you know, Vishnu will just get rid of it. But then Shiva will drink, so therefore he'll become famous for that. So therefore the Lord wanting his devotee to be famous, then...
Okay. They become the instrument.
Yeah.
They become the instrument.
Yes, yes. You are directly situated as the Supreme Truth, known as Paramatma. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 29. The five mantras mentioned in this connection are as follows. 1. Purusha. 2. Aghora. 3. Sadyojata. 4. Vamanadeva. And 5. Ishana. These five mantras are within the category of 38 special Vedic mantras, chanted by Lord Shiva, who is therefore celebrated as Shiva or Mahadev, Shiva meaning auspicious. Right, so Purusha means Purusha Shukta, like that. Vamadevya, that's a mantra. Every yogi, and any time you're doing something, you always use Vamadevya. Because if that's there, then any offenses, anything wrong will be taken care of. Like that. Okay. Lord, another reason why Lord Shiva is called Shiva, which means all auspicious, is that he is self-illuminated, exactly like Lord Vishnu, who is the Paramatma. Because Lord Shiva is directly an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, he is situated Lord Vishnu's direct representative. This fact is corroborated by a Vedic mantra. Patim Vishvas Yat Meshvaram Shashvatam Shivam Achutam. The Supersoul is called by many names, of which Maheshvara, Shiva, and Achyuta are especially mentioned. But, so when you have the Hiranyagarbha Shukta, which is a Shukta about Garbhodakshay Vishnu, saying he's known as Hiranyagarbha. But the wording of it, you would think it's being addressed to Lord Shiva. Like that. So that's the... You know, so you can understand, it's Vishnu who's having these qualities that are manifest through, like that. Because for Shiva to have them, they must be there in Krishna first. The Prajapatis continued, O Lord, your shadow is seen in irreligion, which brings about varieties of irreligious creations. 3. So his shadow means he himself, but what's the shadow means it's not him. So they get it wrong. So from that, then all kinds of irreligious creations come up. Because when you're dealing with irreligion, people just means they do their own thing. That's what makes it irreligion. Religion means there's a nature of it that's given by the Lord. We follow it. That makes it religion. Means us, our connection. Irreligion means we don't consider that. We make up our own. We may see a few things, observe a few things, you know, put two and two together and get 49, and this way then we get our make our own religion. But that, so is it. The three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are your three eyes. All the Vedic literatures, which are full of verses, are emanations from you because their compilers wrote the various scriptures after receiving your glance. O Lord Girisha, since the impersonal Brahman effulgence is transcendental to the three modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, the various directors of this mature world certainly cannot appreciate it or even know where it is. It is not understandable even to Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, or the King of Heaven, Mahendra. 30-31.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Regarding this, you know, the three modes of nature are the three eyes of Shiva. So then that's the reason why his two eyes are open and one eye is closed. And he opens a third eye at the time of destruction.
So you're saying the middle eye is ignorance.
Eye on the forehead, is it representative or not?
I would think so. I would think so. Right, because also says you have, yeah. Okay. Those would be, you know, yeah. But you have to understand is this is the origin. That's a derivative. So the derivative isn't the proof. It can be also, like you see the acharyas, they'll make the point. And then after that, they'll say, also you can look at it in this way, which may have other way, it means those may carry the more general way of looking or other alternative. You understand? So it's that those things are there, so then you have, because it also says sun and moon are his eyes. Right? And then, you know, sun will be the masculine, moon will be the feminine, or the moon is the mind. You know, so you have all these different things all connected together. So the moon's in goodness, sun would be passion. You know, because sun creates, moon maintains. You know, time destroys. So then, you know, like this, all these things are connected. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Brahma Jyoti is actually the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in Brahma Samhita 5:40. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is endowed with great power. The glowing effulgence of his transcendental form is the impersonal Brahman, which is absolute, complete, and unlimited, and which displays the varieties of countless planets with their different opulences in millions of universes. Right, so there's unlimited planets in unlimited universes, so it's a lot, right? And we're a small universe, right? There's, you know, same thing, but just bigger, right? You know, it's just like, remember, where was that? I think it was in, where was that? I'm not sure. It may have been in Hungary. There's this Tesco's. I think it's the biggest in Europe. You can't see across it. It's so big. You know, it's like, you know, it's like ridiculous. Like that. So that's the difference in the universe. Same thing, same franchise, just a lot bigger. That's all.
Dubai Mall takes 2 hours to walk from London.
Yeah, like that. You know, it's the same stuff. Although the impersonal feature of the Absolute is an expansion of the rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he does not need to take care of the impersonalists who enter the Brahma Jyoti. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 9:4, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyaktina avyakta murtina. In my impersonal feature, I pervade this entire universe. Thus, the Avyaktamurti, the impersonal feature, is certainly an expansion of Krishna's energy. Right, so the what do you call it? The impersonalists may be merged there, but he doesn't have to take care of them because they just sit there. Right, so it's not that he's affected or involved, or you know, they become a part of the whole scene, or they just happen to be hanging out there. Mayavadis prefer to merge into this Brahman effulgence, worship Lord Shiva. The mantras referred to in text 29 are called Mukhani, Pancho Pani Shadas Tavesha. Mayavadis take all these mantras seriously in worshiping Lord Shiva. The impersonal Brahman is unknown even to the other directors of the material creation, including Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, and even Lord Vishnu. This does not mean, however, that Lord Vishnu is not omniscient. Lord Vishnu is omniscient, but he does not need to understand what is going on in his all-pervading expansion. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that although everything is an expansion of him, Maya tatam idam sarvam, Bhagavad Gita 9:4, he does not need to take care of everything, na chaham te shvastitaha, since there are various directors like Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Indra. So Shiva, as we saw before, in Mahakalapura, Lord Shiva takes care of the impersonalists who have emerged. Right? They're there, and then when their time is up there, then he sends them back into the material world. So he doesn't even have to worry about it, because he has other people doing. You could say, oh, but he doesn't know, how is he the supreme? It's just like the director, you know, of the company, and that may not know how many rolls of toilet paper are in the bathroom, because he has a guy doing it. But if he needs to find out, he can. But the point is, it's going on because of his potency. So, not saying that Maya bodies were creating them to toilet paper, but hey.
It seems that the world of Lord Shiva is divided in three sections. One is inside the universe, and one is above, but it's lower, which is Mahakalapura, and then Sadashivaloka is the highest. So Mayavadi is sitting,
you know, the Mahakalapura, yeah. Because they're outside the universe, but not outside Mahatattva.
Yeah.
Because of the, because to get outside of the Mahatattva, you have to give up the Karana Sharir,
right,
which they haven't. So then they won't be.
So they're in between.
Yeah, they're in between. Well, that's what they want to be, right? You know, their idea is that they're neither here nor there, right? Yeah. Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on verse 31 in Paramatma Sandarbha, Anucheda 17. These words of Srimad Bhagavatam's 8th canto clearly show that Lord Shiva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To this protest I reply. Oh, he missed it. I mean, he puts in who's talking. Yeah, or like that. To this protest I reply, it is not so. The idea that Lord Shiva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is disproved by the following words of the Vedas. By glorifying Lord Vishnu, the demigods become powerful. Right? Because then it's about the Lord. You're pleasing the Lord. The Lord will carry out these things through the demigods. So it all is taken care of by them. So that's why it's very special when the Lord himself personally does things. Otherwise, he just takes care by the arrangement through the various personalities. But then you see, like with Govardhan Hill, like that, that he personally does himself. So he protects the residents of Vrindavan like that. But you see, Indra gets indirectly chastised. You see, he doesn't need to deal with him. Just his energies take care and outdo him. But he personally. So that's the thing, is that we're dealing with Paramatma, we're dealing with that aspect of the Lord who then involves himself as the Supreme Lord to control, you know, create, maintain, and destroy. Right? So then he has his offices through which he does that. So that Lord Shiva is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead is also confirmed by these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.56, where Lord Shiva himself explains, my dear son, I, Lord Brahma, and the other demigods, who rotate within this universe under the misconception of our greatness, cannot exhibit any power to compete with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For innumerable universes and their inhabitants come into existence and are annihilated by the simple direction of the Lord. Right? He simply breathes in and breathes out. It's accomplished. Well, they have to really, like Brahma really has to work at it to create and, you know, do his work on a daily basis like this. But Lord Vishnu, he's just asleep and breathing and it happens, you know, like that. So it's, you know, who's powerful here? That's his point. In Srimad Bhagavatam 5.17.23, Lord Shiva himself affirms, therefore I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than any of us and under whose control are situated all the demigods, material elements and the senses, and even Lord Brahma and I myself, like birds bound by a rope. Right? It appears they fly, but they can only fly within the context of how big the rope is. Right? So Brahma and Shiva have a bigger rope. Right? You know, the demigod in charge of, you know, the cuticle on your left hand of the little finger on the left side, then he'll have a smaller rope. Right? These two verses of Srimad Bhagavatam clearly refute the idea that Lord Shiva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or, considering this from another point of view, it may be said that Lord Shiva's effulgence, which is described in the verse Srimad Bhagavatam 8.7.31, is the home of all-knowing Vishnu, who is known as the Paramatma, or Supersoul. Understood in this way, it is quite proper that Lord Shiva's effulgence is beyond the living entity's understanding. So then there's a connection between the aspect of Shiva and Krishna's effulgence. So that's why he's the Lord of the effulgence. So those who want to merge there, they worship him. Right? And so we're not interested in merging there, so we worship Krishna. But his devotion and how his service to Krishna, that we appreciate. So by his grace, we give up this concept that we are the controller and enjoyer. Because he's the Lord of false egos. So by his blessings, one can give up that aspect. Right? But we're approaching him as the Lord's devotee. So, does that make sense?
So we actually worship him better because we don't want anything from him.
Yes. Well, they always want something. Mm. Yes. So someone interested in pure devotion all his worship will be better. His respect of other living entities. Because otherwise, why does somebody follow the etiquette? They want something from them. Why don't they not? Because they don't. The Prajapatis continued, when annihilation is performed by the flames and sparks emanating from your eyes, the entire creation is burned to ashes. Nonetheless, you do not know how this happens. What then is to be said of your destroying the Daksha Yajna, Tripurasura, and the Kalakuta poison? Such activities cannot be subject to matters for prayers offered to you. Srila Prabhupada comments, since Lord Shiva considers the great acts he performs to be very unimportant, what was to be said of counteracting the strong poison produced by the churning? The demigods indirectly prayed that Lord Shiva counteract the Kalakuta poison, which was spreading throughout the universe. Right, they're just saying, you're taking care of that is not actually a very great effort on your part. So they referred to it as all the things that he's already known for. And then, with this would be counted in that category. So in a very, indirect way, then they're asking him to do this. The Prajapatis continued, exalted, self-satisfied persons who preach to the entire world, think of your lotus feet constantly within their hearts. However, when persons who do not know your austerity see you move with Uma, they misunderstand you to be lusty. Or when they see you wander in the crematorium, they mistakenly think that you are ferocious and envious. Certainly they are shameless. They cannot understand your activities. Srila Prabhupada comments, Lord Shiva is the topmost Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam yatasham bahu. It is therefore said, Vaishnavera kriya mudra vigye na bujai. Even the most intelligent person cannot understand what a Vaishnava Lord Shiva is doing or how he is acting. Those who are conquered by lusty desires and anger cannot estimate the glories of Lord Shiva, whose position is always transcendental. In all the activities associated with lusty desires, Lord Shiva is an implement of Atmarama. Okay. So, in other words, any activity he performs that may be considered connected with lusty desires by lusty people, he's actually Atmarama. Mm-hmm. That's how he's, because he's self-satisfied. So he's not.
You see that with the Mohini Murti. And he's just happy.
Because he understands it's Vishnu.
Yeah, exactly.
That he's been attracted by Vishnu's potency. Like that. So he's not.
He thinks it's great.
But at the same time, Krishna took him through all the different ashrams. Just so that everybody,
What the?
Yeah, you can imagine that when he ran through the ashram, before he got to the other ashrams, all the other sadhus knew because they already saw the pictures on Instagram, right? So, it was already happening.
Breaking.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, breaking.
Trending.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
I wonder how many likes he gets from this.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, definitely.
Quite a few.
Okay. Ordinary persons, therefore, should not try to understand Lord Shiva and his activities, right? He does what he does. We don't copy that. That's not. One who tries to criticize the activities of Lord Shiva is shameless. The Prajapatis continued, Even personalities like Lord Brahma and other demigods cannot understand your position. For you are beyond the moving and non-moving creation. Since no one can understand you in truth, how can one offer you prayers? It is impossible. As far as we are concerned, we are creatures of Lord Brahma's creation. Under the circumstances, therefore, we cannot offer you adequate prayers. But as far as our ability allows, we have expressed our feelings. O greatest of all rulers, your actual identity is impossible for us to understand. That's why, because he's in that kind of, you could say he's, the jiva is in that tatastha position between internal and external. So he is a position between Vishnu and the material energy, like that. So that's why it's hard to understand, because he's actually Vishnu, but at the same time is there's that aspect where he deals. So when he actually interacts with the material energy, that's Rudra. But when he's not, then that's Sadashiva. Does that make sense? So and then when the two of them are all doing worship and doing all these transcendental, that means he's interacting with Yogamaya. But when he's dealing with the material, the things happening here, that's he's dealing with Mahamaya. So that aspect, then, that's where we'll make the distinction. And where he's not, that's where we'll say they're the same. So that's why he's very, very difficult to understand. So, do we say we can see this? Okay. Oh no, okay. As far as we can see, your presence brings flourishing happiness to everyone, because he's the Lord, so everything's auspicious. Beyond this, no one can appreciate your activities. We can see this much and nothing more. Right? So by their realization, this is how much they can understand. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 35. When the demigods offered these prayers to Lord Shiva, their inner purpose was to please him so that he would rectify the disturbing situation created by the hala poison. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:20, Kamaish tais ter hrita jnana prapadyante nyadevataha. When one worships demigods, this is certainly because of deep-rooted desires. He wants fulfilled by the mercy of those demigods. People are generally attached to the worship of demigods for some motive. So he's pointing out they approached Lord Shiva because they actually had a motive. They wanted to get rid of this, right? So from the material platform, rather than just they're taking part in Vishnu's pastime, how now what will he do? You know, because they want the nectar, then this poison's getting in the way of that and going to disturb everything. Does that make sense? So he's bringing out that aspect. So at different points, then different aspects will be brought out. Verses 36 to 46. Lord Shiva drinks the Kalakuta poison. Interesting. Kalakuta and Hala Hala. It has two names. It's serious poison.
There are four versions of Hala Hala. Hala Hala. Hala Hala. Hala Hala.
And they all mean
they
the same thing?
They all say in Kalakuta poison.
Okay.
Thakur says that.
Okay, so it's just a matter of whether you're, how you say, whether your nerves are shot or whether it gets to this or that, you know, just which kind of, because all those you know, the different snakes and that, they all have different kinds of poisons. Okay. Yeah. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, Lord Shiva is always benevolent towards all living entities. When he saw that the living entities were very much disturbed by the poison, which was spreading everywhere, he was very compassionate. Thus he spoke to his eternal consort, Sati, as follows, 36. Lord Shiva said, my dear Bhavani, just see how all these living entities have been placed in danger because of the poison produced from the churning of the ocean of milk. It is my duty to give protection and safety to all living entities struggling for existence. Certainly, it is the duty of the master to protect his suffering dependents. People in general, being bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are always bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, are always engaged in animosity towards one another.
Chorus.
But devotees, even at the risk of their own temporary lives, try to save them. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 39. This is the characteristic of a Vaishnava. Para dukkha dukkhi. A Vaishnava is always unhappy to see the conditioned souls unhappy. Otherwise, he would have no business teaching them how to become happy. In materialistic life, people must certainly engage in activities of animosity. Materialistic life is therefore compared to samsara dhavanala, a blazing fire that automatically takes place. So if these things are happening, then we can understand that's just the material world. So if things go wrong, people are envious, they're destructive. That's just material nature. But now if they're worshipping the Lord, they're transcending that. That's devotional service. So that's how also you tell what's pure, what's mixed. Yeah? Lord Shiva and his followers in the Parampara system try to save people from this dangerous condition of materialistic life. This is the duty of devotees following the principles of Lord Shiva and belonging to the Rudra Sampradaya. There are four Vaishnava Sampradayas, and the Rudra Sampradaya is one of them because Lord Shiva, Rudra, is the best of the Vaishnavas. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. Indeed, as we shall see, Lord Shiva drank all the poison for the benefit of humanity. Lord Shiva concluded, "My dear gentle wife Bhavani, when one performs benevolent activities for other, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is very pleased. And when the Lord is pleased, I am also pleased, along with all other living creatures. Therefore, let me drink this poison, for all the living entities may thus become happy because of me." So the Lord's pleased, and he's taking care, so then everybody becomes pleased. So the point is, you please Krishna, everybody's pleased. So here is an aspect of Lord Shiva's involvement that we may not have considered, but he's pointing out that's how it works, because he is Bhutanath. He takes care of all the Bhutas. That means all living entities. Right? And then because others are willing to take care of certain ones, then they do. And then the ones that they won't take care of, that's the ones he takes care of. And generally those are the Bhutas, right? Because no one wants to take care of them, right? Really uncool. On Halloween, okay. But other than that, no one wants those guys hanging around, right? Right, yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "After informing Bhavani in this way, Lord Shiva began to drink the poison, and Bhavani, who knew perfectly well the capabilities of Lord Shiva, gave him her permission to do so." Right? So, here, these are his duties, his actions, but because he's with his wife, therefore, then he discusses it with her, how this will work, because otherwise she may have something to bring into the conversation or something else, but the point is that she's included. So this idea is that, no, we just do the things you don't have to include, that's not the position. But at the same time, she knows perfectly how to do it, since he is Purusha. Right? In other words, Bhavani is his Prakriti. Like that. So he knows perfectly as a Purusha how to deal. Just like Vishnu knows perfectly how to deal with Lakshmi. Like that. So it'll work out. We may have to work at it a little bit. Well, just a touch.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Thereafter, Lord Shiva, who is dedicated to auspicious, benevolent work for humanity, compassionately took the whole quantity of poison in his palm and drank it. That's another thing. It's spread throughout the universe, but he just takes it in his palm. Right? So that's, he's qualified. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 42. "Although there was such a great quantity of poison that spread all over the universe, Lord Shiva had such great power that he reduced the poison to a small quantity so that he could hold it in his palm. One should not try to imitate Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva can do whatever he likes, but those who try to imitate Lord Shiva by smoking ganja and other poisonous things will certainly be killed because of such activities." Right? They think they're worshipping Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, he takes ganja and other such poisonous things, and, everything will be nice. But it says they will certainly be killed because of such activities. Because it's not he's doing it because there's a certain purpose. But these others, they're doing it, they have attachments.
doing it because the others are not so comfortable with it.
That's also there.
So,
but then they're comfortable with being not comfortable with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The Gauras, they're trying to follow that.
Yeah.
But they take it to a very rough state. So the point is that they're comfortable with that because of their attachments. Like that. It's not an uncommon thing when you go way down in the modes that then you're trying to go, you want to establish a certain principle, so you go at it with great enthusiasm in the opposite direction. So, you know, it's not that culture. So Shiva, he himself, he does everything. You see how he deals with his wife, how he does everything. It's all very nicely done. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, as if in defamation, the poison born from the ocean of milk manifests its potency by marking Lord Shiva's neck with a bluish line. That line, however, is now accepted as an ornament of the Lord. Right? So it's saying it's being controlled by Lord Shiva and being so to defame it, they put this blue line, but then it's known as an ornament. Right? It's one of the qualities of him. It is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. Right? So it's that you're doing it for the benefit of people in general, not that you're just going out and having a tough time. Like that. So wandering around out into the forest, you know, I mean, in other words, the plague is that way, you're walking the other way and very far away, then you're flailing yourself with a cat of nine. That's not exactly what it's talking about.
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah. We're all without that.
On. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 44. Here is an explanation of how those engaged in activities for the welfare of others are very quickly recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:68-69, Yaidam paramam guhyam madbhaktesh vabhidhashyati nachasman manushyeshu kaschin me priya kritama. One who preaches the message of Bhagavad Gita to my devotees is most dear to me. No one can excel him in satisfying me by worship. There are different kinds of welfare activities in this material world, but the supreme welfare activity is the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Now, like Prabhupada himself, he would do these outside programs, but that was to show us how to do it. Otherwise, his point was he taught the devotees, especially the senior devotees, and then others could go out. You know, just like Prabhupada is expecting, like the GBC and those that they would be doing, they would be preaching to the devotees. And then the devotees, they would be doing the outside programs. Does that make sense? You know, unless it's something very special, then maybe they'll go. But the idea was is that can be done by all the devotees. But then training the devotees, that's done by who's the senior. Is that... Yeah? There are many different kinds of welfare activities in this material world, but the supreme welfare activity is the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Other welfare activities cannot be effective, for the laws of nature and the results of karma cannot be checked. It is by destiny or the laws of karma that one must suffer and joy. For instance, if one is given a court order, he must accept it, whether it brings suffering or profit. Similarly, everyone is under obligations to karma and its reactions. No one can change this. So he's saying all these other welfare activities, you're not going to change their karma. Right? The person's poor, you're feeding him, it's not going to make him rich. It's something we do, right? Because someone is unfortunate and we have facility, we take care. But that's not the highest welfare. The highest welfare is then giving the person the knowledge by which they can transcend karma So therefore, they won't have this problem anymore in the future. Right? So they go back to Godhead. But the other is something that is done, but it's considered ordinary, right? In your modern society, it's considered a very elevated aspect. Right? But actually, it's just meant to be, that's ordinary. You have facility, you share it with others. Right? That's the position. But the point is that the actual principle is that Krishna consciousness, that's the real welfare. So we're doing that, we should have faith that we are doing the best welfare, rather than, oh, what welfare activities you're doing, and it's, well, you know, and like this and that. It's that, no, we're doing this. It means everybody else is feeding and passing out mosquito nets and blankets, like that. Who's distributing God consciousness? You know, that's the point. That's the best, most important. So if that's done, then people will be in a less unfortunate situation, then there will be less problems in the world. Right? There'll always be something, but there'll be less. One should endeavor for that which is never obtained by wandering up and down the universe as a result of the reactions of karma. What is that? One should endeavor to become Krishna conscious. One tries to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. He should be understood to be performing the best welfare activity. That confidence should be there. That should be explained.
Yes.
Because the point is you're not going to change. There's the idea, no, but we can make everybody happy, make it a perfect world, make it all wonderful, and we can all live together. Wouldn't that be... Yes, but the point is you have people's karma. They've done nonsense, they're getting reactions. That you're not going to change. Right? However much they're supposed to suffer, that's going to happen. Right? It means if they were supposed to miss one meal, so they end up down there at the soup kitchen one day. Like that. But if they're supposed to miss, you know, a lifetime, they'll be there every day for the rest of their life. You know, so that won't change. So by giving them Krishna consciousness, that's the real welfare. We should have that. We should be convinced, as Prabhupada said. Right, not thinking, oh, only if we distribute food, and then not really talk about the prasad, just that we're doing food, that's now everybody will say, oh, we're fantastic. Like, when you think about it, does anybody say, oh, aren't you the guys that distribute food? No. We're the guys that chant and dance in the street with bed sheets. Right? You know, that, because that's the highest welfare. Okay. The Lord is automatically very pleased with him. If the Lord is pleased with him, what is left for him to achieve? If one has been recognized by the Lord, even if he does not ask the Lord for anything, the Lord, who is within everyone, supplies him whatever he wants. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Tesham nitya bhiyuktanam yoga kshemam vaham yaham. Bhagavad Gita 9:22. Again, as stated here, Tapyante loka tapena, tapena, sadhava, prayasho, janaha. The best welfare activity is raising people to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Since the conditioned souls are suffering only for want of Krishna consciousness, that's what the suffering is. Because if people are God conscious, then they don't do stuff that makes them suffer. Right? Even if they're pious, that they want something pious automatically creates a suffering because they don't have that result of that piety. So until they get it, they suffer. But because that's their mood, as soon as they get one, they're already working on another. Does that make sense? So they're already suffering, and these are the pious ones. Then those who neglect because of lack of God consciousness, they don't follow God's system of piety, then they suffer even more. So... The Lord Himself also comes to mitigate the suffering of humanity. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya taratmanam sujamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chadushkritam dharma samsta anartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I advent myself millennium after millennium. Bhagavad Gita 4, 7 through 8. So this is the aspect of Sankarsana. Because he puts everything in order, establishes what's the actual point, destroys those who are not. So when we're talking about more the establishment and the rules and the laws and the maintenance of that, we'll say Sankarsan, that aspect. When we're looking at that destroying the demons, that's the Dhirodatta, mm-hmm. like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All the Shastras conclude, therefore, that spreading the Krishna consciousness movement is the best welfare activity in the world. Because of the ultimate benefit this bestows upon people in general, the Lord very quickly recognizes such service performed by a devotee. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, upon hearing of this act, everyone, including... So, in other words, everybody's engaged in the welfare activity of benefiting others by Krishna consciousness. But we see that there's two stages here. One is that every devotee is preaching, and then there's devotees who are preaching to those who are preaching. So the same point is it's still the welfare work, that you're taking someone to the next level of Krishna consciousness. But that's the real thing. So training others in Krishna consciousness, that's the actual point. So whether it's they don't know anything and they're just being introduced to Krishna consciousness, or you're taking them further in Krishna consciousness, that's what we should be doing. Right? That's the main thing. Other things are done in support of that. Right? Since you have devotees and you're training them in Krishna consciousness, therefore there's a temple. Then the temple needs to be managed and maintained. You know, so many different things. You have to go down and pay bills and like this. So all that's simply in support of the highest welfare of preaching. And then it's just, you know, ordinary activity. So that's, man, it's technically ordinary activity, but because it's being done in support of, therefore it's part of the Sankirtana, and therefore it becomes transcendental. Right? But it's not that management is the main thing, and that's what makes all the preaching go nicely. No, the preaching is what makes the preaching go nicely. And then management supports that. Does that make sense? Because anybody who tries to do it the other way, it just doesn't work.
We've seen it.
Yeah. Good managers, good organizers, and they put it still doesn't work. So that's the whole thing. It's in support of. Because if you focus on that, then you have this nice little management package, but not that, you know, okay Krishna consciousness. It's not that it's necessarily going to be bad. Some of it just focus simply on the management, then they generally tend to not even get management done, and then there's no Krishna consciousness either. But if you focus on the preaching and then support and explain management so those who can do it and encourage them, because they know that managers can manage, then they do, then you'll see so much more is done for the same input. Then you'll get so much more result.
Right? The Uttamadhikari should be actually preaching the devotees so that they come to the platform of Madhyamas.
And no, they're preaching so that they come to the platform of Uttamas.
Yeah, Madhyama then Uttama. Right? So that's the way, that's the hierarchy. And the Kanishtas should be the ones who preach the outside non-devotees too. So that they become devotees, something like that. Can you understand?
Yeah, you can do. I mean, if you have enough levels, then you can do that. Mm-hmm. But the point is Prabhupada would preach to all the devotees, but he would specifically put in energy into the senior devotees. Mm-hmm. You know, he would train them how to do things and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But actually, this is hardly been followed. You know, the Uttamadhikaris, they are also preaching the outsiders more. Therefore,
because you probably look at it this way. They're the only ones preaching to the outside. That would probably be, yeah. So the point is, if you preach to the devotees also, then you would get them to preach to the outside. So the thing is, it's just a matter of understanding how it works. Means that it's not a problem that you preach to who's outside, but the point is that if you preach to the outside, then people become devotees, and then with time, then they're advancing. So then the process goes on. So preaching the outside goes. So now if the senior man just preaches the outside, who trains the one who's already become devotees? So he trains them. They continue the process and preach the outside. And this way, it just moves up. Yeah, but it has to be understood that this is what's there. Because the idea is no. The real thing is just pulling people out of the ocean onto the boat. once they get onto the boat, we don't feed them, we don't clothe them, we don't take care of anything, and there's so many of them, they're falling off on the other side, and then floating around and grabbing, wow, look at how many people are, you know, it's like, yeah. So that's why Prabhupada talked about boiling the milk. He talked about it so much, but instead of boiling the milk, we became vegans. So, hey, you work it out. You know, it's kind of like, hey, what happened here? So we're supposed to be, the senior of us is supposed to be preaching and seeing that those who can catch it and understand are doing that, and then they'll be working with those below them, and then, you know, in this way it filters down till it reaches the public. So it's not that we just sit in the temples and study all day. We don't do that. So the point is that it's about taking Krishna consciousness out to the people, but we have to understand that training the devotees is still part of the Sankirtan mission. But some will take it, no, only the frontline preaching of book distribution and doing programs, that's preaching. And things that you're like giving class in the temple, that's all Maya. So that's a neophyte understanding. You understand? So the point is it's a process. You're supposed to go from Shraddha to Prema. So that means is that, yes, you're catching people by association and making them into devotees so that they get Shraddha. But how you now, once they get Shraddha, then we kind of, that's it. Okay, get them up to initiation and then you're on your own. But the point is what about Anartha Nivriti? What about Nishta? All these things. So you have to be able to take them through. That's why there must be a focus on this aspect of preaching to the devotees. Because it's a continuation of exactly the same thing. It's not that it's different. Oh, no, but Prabhupada always did that. No, in other words, if someone says Prabhupada never did that, that means they were not in the room. Right? There's devotees that can say, Prabhupada was doing this, I was in the room. Right? You know, so it's like, you know, but they weren't in the room. Prabhupada would be there, preaching, telling them how to do things and this and that. And so that's that next level. Right. He wants us to study the books. He's preaching to us, who are devotees. Right? Then we get these books to others. You understand? So the whole point is that hierarchy is there. If we understand that, then it'll work. But if nobody's preaching, yes, the senior men go out and preach. It used to be before, every bhakta could make devotees. There'd be a few. I remember a temple, I think, even they could preach. But just they were a little shy, so they'd stay in the temple. So like on the Sunday program they'd preach. They wouldn't go out. But otherwise, before, every new bhakta would preach and make devotees. Most devotees are made by new bhaktas or first initiated devotees like this. That's practically, you know, then that's who everybody was made. Very few were made by Prabhupada himself personally. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, the big preacher, like this. Just like this. So then, it just means people aren't preaching, therefore then, because it must go on, senior men are doing it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, upon hearing of this act, everyone, including Bhavani, the daughter of Maharaj Daksha, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and the people in general very highly praised this deed performed by Lord Shiva, who is worshipped by the demigods and who bestows benedictions upon the people. Scorpions, cobras, poisonous drugs, and other animals whose bites are poisonous took the opportunity to drink whatever little poison had fallen and scattered from Lord Shiva's hand while he was drinking. Right, so he takes care of everybody. Like, no one who wants to take care of the scorpions and snakes. So Lord Shiva's kind to them also. Right, we would tell him, you know, hey, beat it, you know, like that. Here it's interesting. It says daughter of Maharaj Daksha. Yeah. So this means that this happened before. Okay, so because I was wondering what was the timeline of this, because it said the Prajapatis were there, so then, so at this time it seems, well, you know, things are tough, then, you know, there's something to be accomplished, then, you know, Prajapati is there, but otherwise, and at the Yajna, he wasn't so understanding.
No.
Conclusion. Since Lord Vishnu acts through Lord Shiva in the creation of the material world, whatever prayers are offered to Lord Shiva, actually Lord Vishnu is indicated. The statement that the impersonal Brahman is unknown to Lord Vishnu does not imply any deficiency in the Lord. It simply means that, as the supreme enjoyer, he's not obliged to take care personally of everything, since there are various demigods who manage the creation on his behalf. Lord Shiva can be addressed as having the qualities of Lord Vishnu because he is Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord. So in that way, you can say he's an avatar. Like that. So these are all the different asks. How he is Lord Vishnu, but at the same time, there's a difference. Like that. So that's the position of Shiva. Right? So we're... Right? Okay. Chapter 8, The Churning of the Milk Ocean. Pratigya, the goddess of fortune is the exclusive property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First point to be made. And all the other things that come out, then that's the one that catches everyone's attention, right? Because she is Bhagavat Para, absolutely inclined to be possessed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hetu. But Ravana wanted to deprive Ramachandra of Lakshmi, Sita, and thus be victorious. Udaharana and Shamshaya. But the result was just the opposite, because this entire material empire was vanquished. If one wants the favor of the goddess of fortune, Mother Lakshmi, one must keep her with Narayana. The devotees who are always engaged in the service of Narayana can easily achieve the favor of the goddess of fortune without a doubt. Upanai. So one wants Lakshmi, but she's only inclined towards Vishnu. So therefore, if you're inclined towards Vishnu, then she always being with Vishnu, therefore the benefits of the Lord's potency come along with the worship of the Lord. But if we try to approach her separately like Ravana did, then it doesn't work out good for him, right? His entire material empire was vanquished. And even before the war, then Hanuman burnt it to the ground. It was made of pure gold. So gold, once it catches on fire, it burns for a very long time. It's not like other things, it burns and goes out. It just burns and keeps burning. So I think it was mentioned, it was burning for a week. You know, so very dangerous. So he's already lost a lot. Right, you know, it's like people complain about, you know, their assets are burning up or, you know, like that. This was literal. Yes.
But gold didn't burn, it just melted.
Did I know it was burning?
Really?
Yeah. It was serious. You know, Hanuman's not going to just, you know, melt it.
That's boring.
Yeah, you know, it's going to. Unless it's specifically said, but from what I heard, understood, is he actually caught on fire. If it's hot enough, it'll light. You know, it's like metal. When you see it, it gets really hot. You see flames coming off of it, like that. So once it gets to that, then it stays for a long time. Right? And anything else that gets close to it naturally be burnt up. So even if it is that hot and it's flowing around, it's going to burn up a lot of stuff. Yeah. So everyone's going to be walking around on stilts, but then what are you going to use as stilts? So it's a problem. Hence, one cannot achieve the mercy of the goddess of fortune unless one prays both to her and to the supreme enjoyer, the personality of Godhead, Siddhanta. And so that's the whole point. So in other words, they churn the milk ocean and that, so many things will come out, but it has to be understood. All these opulences belong to the Lord. So if you worship the Lord, then these benefits are there. You don't worship the Lord, then it's a problem. Right? Dhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how the goddess of fortune appeared during the churning of the ocean of milk and how she accepted Lord Vishnu as her husband. As described later in the chapter, when Dhanvantari appeared with a pot of nectar, the demons immediately snatched it from him. Right? You know, in other words, they were thinking, yeah, we'll work along with it, you know, because no one can do it themselves, neither demigods nor the demons. Right? But under the plan of the Lord, they all work together. So in Krishna consciousness, all parties can work together. But the demigods were thinking, we'll engage them and then we'll get the nectar, and the demons were thinking exactly the same thing. Right?
So it's the same consciousness, but just different approach.
Yeah, different approach. One accepts the Lord, one doesn't. So that's the point, is that that's why we have to be careful. As devotees, we can still have these same problems as the demigods. Like that. So that's why we have to be careful. That's why they're pointed out. Otherwise, why do we need to hear about, you know, like we said, Gandharva Pajalpa? But it's there because we as devotees can have the same problems. You know, we can be like Indra. We can become, we're successful at something. We can become proud of that, or our potency, or used to what we're used to, and or not. We don't want anything outside of what we're used to, even though that may be what Krishna desires, like using the thunderbolt instead of his club. You know, all these different kinds of things that the demigods get distracted by. And so we have to be careful of the same thing, because as it's said, is that they're basically neophyte devotees who then were more interested in the facilities than in going back to Godhead. So then they ended up on the heavenly planets. So it's just, does that make sense? So that's what you have there. But, you know, their body's in the mode of goodness, everything's in the mode of goodness, so therefore the tendency will be follow everything nicely, connected all to the Lord. But that desire for themselves to get some benefit also still remains. Does that make sense? It's not, that's why we say mode of goodness isn't fully pure. There's still some passion, some ignorance is there. Does that make sense? So that's why generally you see everything goes very nicely, but occasionally then, you know, they fall off the wagon. Right? You know, like that. What do you call it? Yeah, they call it. Indra's got his chip in his pocket, you know, for how you say
18 months.
Yeah, you know, since he's, you know, he's going to false egos anonymous, you know, it's like that. You know,
Ahankara
anonymous. Yes, Ahankara anonymous. Yeah. Hi. I'm Indra. Hi, Indra. Yeah. You know, I the other day was sitting there and I was so proud. I thought the Supreme Lord was, you know, just an idiot kid. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, true.
But Lord Vishnu appeared as the incarnation Mohini, the most beautiful woman in the world, just to captivate the demons and save the nectar for the demigods. So when the Lord does take on, he'll be the most beautiful, right? So that's it. He wants to be attractive and all that. That's why the last covering, the deity is Mohini. So even if somehow or another one gets through all the other layers, generally, it appears maybe no one gets out of the last layer. Right, you know. So Gopu Kumar, he was cool. Just, you know, like next, they finally do the worship and all that. But then the problem is then, you know, the next worship and then take prasad and, you know, like that. I remember it was a classic thing. The boy's walking down the road, you know, like that. And mother's coming out, just happens to be coming out for something, checking, and, oh, it's hot today, and what's that, you want to come in for some lassi? We just have some here, and like, oh, okay, yeah, well, you know, and then, you know, all this and that, and then after the boy goes, and, you know, she, mom tells, you know, the daughter, well, so what do you think? No, not that one, the other one. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, like that, you know, come do the worship, you know, and, you know, like that, yeah. So, yeah. In other words, it's not a new trick. It's a
right.
Yes.
But it seems that Lord is biased.
Biased? How is he biased? Because he took the pot away from the demons.
It gave it to the demigods, so we come back to the same point.
But who deserves it?
Both.
Why do they both deserve it?
Because they both did the work.
Yes. It's just like, okay, the guy in the factory, he sits there, and when the part comes down, he takes his little machine and puts the rivet on it, then it keeps moving to the next guy. So when it's done, and then that factory makes, you know, millions of dollars, then he should get his share. Means he should get, you know, there's 100 guys working there, so therefore he should get, you know, $1 million.
No.
Then?
Should get his share.
Their share is the glances of Mohini.
Which have been noticed before.
For the materialist, that's pretty good. You know, they're not complaining at that moment. They will later, simply because they saw it's a trick. But then the whole thing is, how much is a trick? You know, that, you know, so it means it's all a trick. So it's just, so in other words, don't go too far. Too much is revealed. Like that, yes.
You know. No, I just wanted to be fair.
Yeah, it is fair. They're good. They're not going to be happy anyway, no matter what happens. But that's what it's saying, is that those who are non-God conscious are never victorious and never happy. Right? So that's the whole point. So you can't please them anyway.
They don't complain even later. They don't complain to her. They're okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because when she's distributing it, they don't... They're just watching. They're just so happy, you know.
He's coming.
You know? Cuz she's looking at them, not the demigods. She's handing it out to the demigods, but she's looking at the demons. So they're just all sitting there, you know, just
waiting
happy
for their share.
No, they're just so absorbed in looking. Cuz they think that the opulence, you know, that the how you say, the Lord's opulence is on the platform of sense gratification, then that's actually the what you're trying to get. You know, like that. So there they have. So they're happy. But the point is Lakshmi's not about to do that. So Krishna himself comes as Mohini, and then he's cool.
Yeah, because nobody will say anything about him if she does.
No, but she's that's the whole point. That's why the chapter it's about. Yeah. 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 Okay. But Lord Vishnu appears as the incarnation of Mohini, the most beautiful woman in the world, just to captivate the demons and save the nectar for the demigods. So that's the thing. Captivate the demons, save the nectar for the demigods. So demigods get the nectar and they get the captivation. Because that's what they're looking for, and they're never going to be satisfied anyway. So. Are you thinking they should have got minimum wage or something?
Yes.
No, but this is. So the captivating element, that is substance. That is,
I'm just
something.
Presenting doubts.
Yeah, but Rahu gets, you know, so...
something. Yeah, but it didn't work out so good for him. You know, you, how you say, immortal, but your head's over here and your body's over there. And they're always on opposite sides, right? You know, so you can never quite get to it. You know?
That's it.
Yeah, like that. So therefore, you know, so better the nectar goes to the demigods, and they get the captivating glances. That's all. Okay, so stop.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.